Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
Hey, UK Bills Mafia. This is Christian Wade of your Buffalo Bills. This is the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast with your hosts, Matt and Alex. Let's go, Buffalo! Woo!
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast, Bills News with a UK twist. Matt here, joined as ever by Alex. And Alex, you know what time it is. It's time to
celebrate good times. Come on. Celebrate good times. Come on. Let's celebrate.
As we celebrate our 100th episode of the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues. I mean, from that day in April, Alex, how are you doing? And since that day in April, do you really think we would have come this far, everything that we've actually done? How have you found it?
It's a lot of bloody talking. It's just a lot of blah, blah, blah from me.
it's been a real good run. I mean, I've enjoyed every moment of it. All the guests we've had, all the guests we're gonna have, coming up when I start getting my contacts all into place. But quick off the top of your head, favorite guest and favorite episode.
Easiest is our 50th episode when we had Stevie Johnson and Steve Tasker on. I mean, it's one of those situations where, you know, as a fan, you know, you think, oh, maybe I'll just see them in passing somewhere downtown for like a brief second, but, you know, never having thought the opportunity to have an interview with two Bills legends like that. It's been a delight and an honor. And it's been with a lot of sacrifice too, because let me tell you, my fantasy football teams this year are complete and utter trash. And it's because I've only been focused on Buffalo Bills analysis, and I'm not really paying attention to the rest of the league unless it's one of our opponents. So all summer long, getting ready for the Bills season, I did not get ready for fantasy football season, and it shows.
it's an interesting one for me as well. I mean, it's since April 2019, I think, with the first ever episode actually came out. And to be honest, I didn't think we'd get past 20 or 25 episodes. I think when I saw the view counts on that, I thought, okay, this may actually end sooner than possible. But thanks to all the followers out there and all the guests we've had, we've been able to bring really great content out. And I think it's really got me and you thinking a lot more and actually getting to know each other a lot better. And I guess after yesterday and Thanksgiving, it's the one thing I've got to be thankful for, this working or hosting the podcast with you and for the guests and the followers that we had.
Yeah, it's really been great. And you know, I leave 1 year from like this week, so I don't know what's gonna happen then, but let's have one more good year.
Yes. And by the way, how was your Thanksgiving?
I literally couldn't wake up this morning. I was still in a food coma that many hours later. It's fantastic. You know, I really enjoy the challenge of cooking a big meal like that. Everything from scratch. You know, it could have been easy. I could have went to the store and got some turkey breast. I could have went and got the boxed stuffing. I could have got the instant mashed potatoes, but no, I went all out, and it took, you know, all morning from like 11, maybe 10 a.m. till 3 was just me in the kitchen cooking with my wife.
That's fair enough. I mean, me is it's a day just from football for me. I mean, it's just, I think obviously everyone celebrates it. You guys the Americans help celebrate a lot more because it's actually almost like a national holiday. Obviously, for us, it's a national holiday as such, and we just get to watch football Long day of work, and then suddenly, bang, we got the get the beers out.
I mean, the first game was interesting, but that second game was pretty boring. I don't know. It's just,
yeah,
it was four bad teams, so not a lot of implications for the Bills. Or just for, you know, maybe more than anything, just fantasy implications. But, you know, I needed to see, this is what I mean by having such a shit fantasy football team. I was relying on Andy Dalton yesterday. Who does that?
Yeah.
You know?
No. So,
yeah.
That's true.
Horrible team.
And I'm,
but, you know, let's go to the Bills. We don't need to talk about
my fantasy football
team anymore.
Well, I'm going to say one thing. I'm actually pissed off that I actually left Will Fuller on the bench on one of my fantasy teams.
Oh, how do you do that? All right, we got to talk about that.
Yeah, no, we don't need to talk about that.
Okay.
I think it might cost me a match, but I think I'm in a good shot.
Deshaun
Watson's
playoffs. A baller, and Will Fuller's his guy. I mean, I feel like he's probably, aside from Watson, he's the only must start on that offense. So,
I mean, If we turn our attention back to the episode.
Not a fantasy football podcast.
Yes. Yes, we had a guest lined up. I did the interview with that because I think you were still hungover or totally overslept.
No, it was Thanksgiving prep time, so I was getting the bird ready and getting the pie crusts ready and stuff like that.
But our guest today, and it was, I was actually, you know, I loved the conversation. I mean, we could have talked for ages with this guest. I mean, it's Mike Carlson was the guest. People know him from Super Bowl coverages here in the UK, does work for Channel 5 and all that. He's a very insightful guy, very knowledgeable, and also has actually played lacrosse with Bill Belichick.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so it's it was a great interview. I mean, it's something that you'll enjoy. Everyone will enjoy actually listening to, from really a really good mind. We talk about the Bills. He talks a little bit about we talk a little bit about the AFC, and obviously preview the Chargers game. So sit back and enjoy our the interview with the great Mike Carlson.
And on the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, we'd like to welcome Mike Carlson to the show. Mike, thank you very, very much for joining me on the show.
Ah, it's a pleasure. The Buffalo Bandits are one of my favorite lacrosse teams.
So that's awesome. I mean, everyone loves everyone loves Buffalo. That's what we try to put in there.
Have you ever read a book? I'll recommend. I don't stop. Once you get me going, I don't stop. If you're a Buffalo person, I would really recommend a book called City of Light.
Yeah.
It's by a woman named Lauren Belfer, and it's a thriller of sorts that revolves around the assassination of President McKinley at the Pan Am Exposition, I guess it was, in 1901. Yeah. And Buffalo was called the City of Light because of Niagara Falls. They were really the first city in America that had electric light power in the streets. So that was the nickname. And no one thinks of Buffalo these days as the City of Light, you know, be the last thing. It's a really good book, really well written and interesting. And it has one of the greatest howlers of all time in it. Early in the book, she talks about somebody in the aristocracy of Buffalo being descended from a long line of New England Shakers. And the reason that's funny is that the Shakers didn't believe in procreation.
Yeah, exactly.
They were a sect that didn't let you sleep, so that the line died out. And I think she was probably thinking of Quakers, but but, you know, Shaker, Quaker, what's the difference?
Exactly.
But if you forget about that, and you know, obviously I can't.
No, it's fine.
It's a really good book, and it's really interesting about Buffalo at the turn of the last century.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll move on. We'll start off with the AFC East, and I mean, it's Pat. You said you're a Pats, not a fan as such, but looking out the window over at them. I think that's probably the best analogy I can probably put for that.
Well, none really. I mean, I try not to. But given I'm from New England and Bill and I went to college together, I find myself sort of supporting the Pats, so if not always rooting for them. I do have a Tom Brady 12.5 T-shirt. Which I'm very pleased with.
We should end it there. No, Tom Brady. No. Yeah, no, that's fine.
But, you know, growing up in New England, the Patriots were never my team. When I was a kid before the AFL, the New York Football Giants were the New England's team by default, basically. And in the area where I lived in Connecticut, on Sundays when the Giants were at home, the games were blacked out on television in New York. Yeah. Which we got, but they were shown on the CBS network affiliate in Hartford, Connecticut. So literally on Sundays, there would be this caravan of cars filled with New York Giants fans who would go up the Merritt Parkway toward Hartford and then up the Berlin Turnpike, which is the same road. It just changes names. And they would start pouring into these motels along the road, because this was the main road north from New York in those days. And so all these motels would be full of Giants fans. The rooms would all have the doors open, the TVs on, and they would, you know, they'd be like in groups where they'd be going from room to room, partying and stuff like that. And I can remember going up to an uncle's in 1958 and watching the Giants and Colts in the greatest game ever played when I was just a little kid, and they let me sit with the adults, you know, and watch the game. But when the AFL came along, the team that actually intrigued me was the Chargers, like a lot of kids, because they had these great uniforms, and they had Lance Allworth and Keith Lincoln and John Hadle and Ernie Ladd, who we knew from wrestling shows. And, My second favorite player to Allworth was a guy called Earl Faison, who was a defensive end from Indiana, who for some reason I knew and thought was really good. And he was. Anyway, so the Chargers were kind of my favorite, but that really didn't last. And I've never had a team that lasted as my favorite team until I moved to Montreal and rooted for the Alouettes, who were coached by Marv Levy in those days. And But because I'm from New England, I do have this kind of intrinsic New England fan instinct or gene that pops up in you. Where I'm from is kind of like at the place where New England starts to turn into New York. So,
on the border.
Yeah. There's an old saying, you know, you can tell where New England begins at the point where the Red Sox fans start to outnumber the Yankee fans. But, and I was never a New York fan, really. So rooting for the Giants was always difficult for me. I had another instinctive distrust of New York. And so long story short, I was basically a New England fan, and with Bill coaching, since I, you know, played lacrosse with Bill in college and knew him a bit. That was kind of like I've, you know, followed Bill really, really closely and, admired what they've done, and this year feel very sorry for him, because it's a tough situation that's not getting any better.
I think most Bills fans are actually really happy about
it. I'm sure they are. And when I was a kid, it's funny, because when I was a actually, you can put this in the podcast if you want. It's probably more interesting than just talking about it. Yeah, I mean, I try not to support a team, because when you're commentating, you know, I remember at Sky they wanted me to wear a jersey on air, and I told them to get lost. I said, you know, it's not supposed to be a fan thing. I'm supposed to be actually, you know, working at this.
Independent biased.
Yeah, and I said last year in prescience, and I mean, the Bills are a good solid team, and last year you could see one of the future problems or upcoming problems for the Patriots was that they could only win games where their defense where the defense kept the other team from scoring a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and then, for example, they should have really, or they could have beaten the Chiefs at the end of last season. They were in a position to do that, but a couple of bad calls hurt them. And, you know, not that they were the better team, but their defense had put them in the position to be able to win that game, you know. And if Gilmore gets the TD return and on the fumble, or if Keel Harry gets the touchdown, they might have won that game. Same thing with the Bills games. They played them twice, and both times the Bills were in a position to win. But Josh Allen just couldn't get it done. And you could see what the Patriots game plan was to make Josh Allen beat them.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a combination of missing a couple of not just throws, but receivers, you know, not being unable to put more than whatever it was, 16 or 17 on the board, cost them both those games. But you could see that the Bills were legitimate contenders, a legitimate competition for them. And I said last year that the Dolphins would be. I'm a little surprised that they're where they are now, but part of that is the Patriots' demise. But,
yeah,
you know, Brian Flores is a smart coach, you know, and of all the Belichick disciples who've gone on to head coaching positions, he to me seems to be the one who's best been able to do what Bill did in New England, which is to create a culture that he controls, where and everyone gets on the same page. And you know, they've done a great job of bringing in players and getting players who are, you know, who buy into the system. You know, I don't know what the long-term prognosis on Tua is. I did say during the draft that I liked Herbert better than Tua, you know, anyway. But I wasn't surprised they took him, because he, you know, if you're with Fitz, you can run the same kind of stuff. And Chan Gailey is that kind of a offensive coordinator. But you can just see that, you know, he's a smart defensive game planner, but the culture of the team is one that's aimed at winning. And there's a lot of similarities in just in concept to what Sean McDermott has done, you know, and not least the fact that he and the general manager are on the same page. I think in today's NFL you can see where, you know, there are some coaches who can be their own general managers, you know, just have, say, a talented advisor guy, which is like Belichick with Caserio, or, you know, Andy Reid with Dorsey before he and Dorsey apparently clashed or whatever. And, you know, but most of them get in over their heads. It's too much. And what you need is to have a general manager who you're on more or less equal footing with, who can control your impulses, but who also understands what you're trying to do, and therefore look for players who can do what you want to do.
I think that's what made obviously McDermott and Bean a really good tandem in Buffalo.
Absolutely, and you can see what Bean did. You know, right when they took over, it was a lot like what Miami did when they were trading away players, and everyone was saying, oh, you know, they traded Tunsil, they're not getting enough value for him, and that kind of stuff. You know, well, Sammy Watkins and Marcel Darius and Darby, you know, they let a lot of those guys go, and they used the cap flexibility to build, you know, and they've built a really strong roster. You know, when you look at it like top to bottom, there's a lot of depth. There's a lot of, what would you call it? Not Jags in the sense of just a guy, but there's a lot of those kind of fringe players, guys who are on practice squads or second teamers, you know, cheap free agents, who they brought in, you know, to fill specific roles. Like Jerry Hughes, like all of the Carolina guys, what Trent Murphy, what's the guy from, Quentin Jefferson. I mean, Poyer, we knew, is a good player. Vernon Butler from Carolina, Addison from Carolina, you know, so they've really got, AJ Klein from Carolina, you know, although he was in New Orleans in between. Yeah. But, you know, guys who understand what McDermott wants to do, you know, they know they know what his system depends on, and they don't come too expensive, which means that they can spend money on a couple of premium free agents, and they have also, you know, drafted really well. You know, the Tre'Davious White, Tremaine Edmonds, Josh Allen, all in the first round. You know, and those are all guys that they've hit on.
I mean, it's good to obviously hear the culture and all that. I mean, after last season and say the first 4 weeks, I bang on it quite a lot, is that their offense has actually really taken shape now. Obviously, it had a little bit of a lull. And what's your opinion on Daboll and what he's actually done now? He's been given the the weapons in the third year of Allen's.
I think you've put your finger on part of it is having the weapons, which makes it a lot easier. I've always been kind of back and forth on him because I've seen where he hasn't done that well over the years, and I always see flashes of kind of offensive brilliance, but not necessarily a consistent kind of game. And that's a problem when you've got Josh Allen, who's a fairly unique talent, you know, but they brought in what you might even think was a classic trio of receivers, you know, all as free agents. When you've got Brown, Diggs, and Beasley, you know, deep guy, Beasley's the short, Diggs is the guy for everything else in between. Although Diggs, I think, I remember doing him when he was at Maryland, and I was doing Big Ten games for Eurosport, and he was a very talented guy on a team without really a really good quarterback, and of course overmanned in the Big Ten. So they were always having troubles. But I like Gabriel Davis a lot. I think he was a really good draft pick, and I think Daboll they haven't quite got to a point where they can where they can run the ball enough to be more than complementary, or to be complementary, actually. Their run game is still kind of hit and miss. And, you know, I'm not sure why that is, because you would think with defenses having to account for Josh Allen, it would be give you opportunities to open up in the running game, and I'm not sure that they might need to sort of spread more or something like that. The offensive line is kind of a work in progress. Apart from Mitch Morse, there's nobody who really dominates, I think, on that bunch. Although I think moving Cody Ford to guard was probably a smart move. I think he might have been overmatched at tackle. And I like Dawson Knox a lot. You know, and I like Lee Smith. Lee Smith's the kind of guy, what a great pickup, you know. He's just the kind of guy who's been around for forever, it seems, because he's basically a blocking tight end. And everybody says, oh, we need one. But when it comes time to the crunch, that's kind of the thing that goes. But, you know, he's like having another offensive lineman in there when they play it. So, like I said, it's a solid team, but it all depends on Josh Allen and kind of like which Josh Allen you're going to get. And I think part of the thing is they're still trying to figure out, short of putting him in as a tailback in a single wing system, you know, whether the offense is structured around Josh Allen, or whether Allen is going to be good enough to take advantage of those weapons that they have on a consistent basis. And I think this is the big thing that people kind of forget in the NFL, is that it still comes down to consistency. And you see it in teams with quarterbacks who are running threats
Yeah.
They can Watson. Get you Deshaun Watson, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson. You know, it's great. Michael Vick going back. You know, it's great that they can do this stuff and they'll create points for you when you wouldn't otherwise get them. I mean, when you watched Houston and New England last week, it was like watching New England playing Deshaun Watson in a playground game. You know, they had nothing else. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't really, they didn't do a great job. They did a decent job, but not a great job of passing in standard stuff. But every time Watson got to take three or four steps, New England was dead. And maybe I'm showing my home, my my fan bow, but boy, did Houston get away with a lot of holding in the offensive line. Because, you know, once he starts to move, everybody then just grabs on. But anyway, and I think that's the thing with Josh Allen. If you can't sit down and convert consistently on third and eight, you know, be able to throw accurately, that the kind of quick pass that you need to throw, that's always going to be a problem for you. That to me is the one thing that's holding Allen back from being, you know, up at the top. And the weird part is, it looked like he got that. It looked like this year he came out and got that in the first, you know, first weeks of the season. But since then, he's seemed to be more like Josh Allen of the past two seasons. A bit better passing, but not enough to make that difference. You know, they're still not. And you saw it when they lost to Houston's game. Was it Houston or Miami? 2 weeks ago. Was that Houston?
No, but we've lost to Titans, Chiefs, and
it was Titans. Cardinals. Yeah, the Titans game plan was basically New England's.
Yeah,
it was let Josh Allen beat us. You know, let's try to take away everything, make it difficult for him to throw downfield, and dare him to beat us with long and medium range passes. And that's still going to be the game plan for most teams.
I mean, with Josh, it's good to see with Josh that obviously over the 3 years he's constantly now starting to get better. Obviously his completion percentage now is 68.4, I believe. And obviously he'd always been good at the intermediate 0 to 19 yard mark. I think last year is one of the better quarterbacks at it. I mean, you can see a lot of improvement on him. I'm assuming the next step for him really is just to show that consistency and actually be more of, I hate to try and say this, more of a Tom Brady type player when he's actually looking into the game management, because we can see he can make those adjustments, but it's just that consistency of how Brady actually does it that Josh Allen really, do you think, needs to be in that sort of bracket?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You don't want him to be a giant Joe Ferguson, basically. Talking of mine, I mentioned this, and he was talking about Josh Allen, and then I said, you know, Josh Allen reminds me of when you're like 11 years old and you go to the local punt, pass, and kick tryouts, which is this thing the NFL began running, or someone began running when I was a little kid. And, you know, you think, oh, you're doing really good. And then there's always, every town's got like one kid who's 11 years old or 12 years, and he's 6'2" and he weighs 175 pounds and he's got a beard. And he can, you know, Andy Reid was that kid. You can see the video of Andy Reid. He went on national television. He was in the national finals of punt, pass, and kick. And he's almost twice as big as a couple of the kids that he's competing against. And that's what Josh Allen looks like, you know.
Yeah.
He looks like that big kid who can throw the ball, you know, throw the ball a mile. And I also was recommending that Tom Brady take up place kicking, and then he could be like George Blanda and play till he was 50 and as a backup quarterback and place kicker. This is a typical morning for me if I don't have any work to do, which is more typical than usual. But yeah, I mean, the Bills have a funny history of quarterbacks. You know, it's apart from Jim Kelly, who was a great passer and working in a great system. Always think that, you know, his getting outsmarted by Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl was more important than Scott Norwood missing yeah. the kick, you know. But you know, otherwise Jack Kemp and arguably their best quarterback before Jim Kelly, you know. Those early Bills teams, Cookie Gilchrist was one of my favorites. Those early Bills teams were great. Although I think I wrote when Keith Lincoln died not so long ago, and I wrote a piece for my Patreon column, which is really fun to read if anyone's listening, about when Mike, you know, him and the key moment when Mike Stratton laid him out on a swing pass out of the backfield. And you know, I remember those Bills teams fondly. It's like New York's got three teams, right? But two of them aren't in New York. They play in New Jersey. And the Bills are actually the only team from New York. But I don't have any genetic objection or reticence to the Bills. You know, I've always liked Buffalo. I lived in Montreal for a while, and you know, Montreal and the Sabres was always a great rivalry, without being, you know, kind of poisonous the way Montreal against Quebec was, or Toronto, and you know, in those days, the Gilbert Perreault days in Buffalo, were really good. And my buddy Kevin, you know, Kevin Cadle.
Kevin.
Yeah. Kevin was from Buffalo, obviously. Yeah. So we spent a lot of time trashing the Bills, or I spent a lot of time trashing the Bills. But he was, when he was a kid, he was a ball boy for the Buffalo Braves basketball team, who are now the LA Clippers. They moved to San Diego and then to LA. But those were the days when Bob McAdoo was the big star player there. And Kevin was there at the games as a kid, collecting the balls when the guys were shooting around and all that kind of stuff. Which was like his start in basketball.
Yeah. I mean, I loved Kev. I mean, it's a shame he was taken so early on that.
It was larger
than life. He was a great character.
It didn't have to happen. You know, it was really just kind of mistaken diagnosis. Yeah. We did some basketball together, which nobody really knew about because it was for a satellite channel that was broadcasting in the Middle East. Mm. But the EuroLeague basketball, and we each would do games separately during the season once a week, just by ourselves. But then when they had the European Final Four, we would do them together, and I'd do the play-by-play and Kevin would do the color. And it was great. It was such fun. Working with him was always a gas.
Yeah. I mean, looking at towards this season, the rest of the season coming up, I mean, do you see the Bills actually taking the division? Do you think they could make a run at least to the championship game? I think
Super Bowl that's an interesting question. I sat down last week and plotted out all of the divisions and playoff scenarios, and I've got the Bills winning the division at 11-5. And Miami making the playoffs at 10-6. AFC is going to be a tough slog. When you look at it, I mean, obviously Kansas City is going to be difficult to beat at home. And I've got the seeds going to them in Pittsburgh at the moment, which obviously, because they're, you know, they've only got one loss between them. So they're both in a good position to, actually, there's only one seed. So that would go to one, or it will be a tiebreaker because I've got them both on 13-3. But I think they could beat Baltimore. Especially the way Baltimore is playing now. I think the team that would give them the most trouble outside that, besides Miami, it's going to be tough, and they play the last week of the season. So that game could be a division decider quite easily. The team that might be tough for them otherwise would be Indianapolis. Who are similar to them in a lot of ways, especially defensively, but quicker. But you know, so I think a lot will depend on the seeding.
I think at the moment we're pending at three, I think, aren't we? Pending at three due to face the Raiders, or has that changed?
The Raiders, they can beat. It's funny, McDermott, I remember McDermott from Philadelphia, obviously, when Jimmy Johnson was the defensive coordinator and in Carolina. And he doesn't play quite the Jimmy Johnson way, which was blitz, 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 blitz. But he plays something that reminds me a bit of Galen Hall and the Rhine Fire in World League, where they basically simply played cover two all the time and dared you to beat them with short passes and runs and wait for you to make a mistake. And he's obviously more sophisticated than that. I mean, they play multiple fronts. They play different kinds of coverage. But basically what he wants to do is keep everything in front of him and make you beat him by playing perfect football, by executing all the way up and down the field. And that's really difficult because they've also now got a lot of talent on defense. They're not a turnover pass rush kind of team. Who's their best pass rush? Natural pass rusher is probably Jerry Hughes, I suppose. But they're so solid and they get such good push inside with Oliver, who's a really good player. Oliver at this point might be one of the most overlooked. I wouldn't say he's underrated because anyone looks at him knows how great he is, but he's one of the more overlooked players in the league. And they've got a great set of linebacker. And Edmonds is another really good player. So they can basically play nickel a lot. And they get such good they get such good use of the front four. And Edmonds is so versatile as one of the linebackers. It makes that job easy. And Klein is a really good linebacker, especially against the run.
And got Milano due to come back.
When Milano's back, they can go back, I think. They've really been avoiding it from what I've seen the last couple of weeks without him. They've sort of gone to playing nickel an awful lot so that they don't have to put a third linebacker on the field. But Milano is so quick that they can then afford to do that. But Poyer's really good safety. Tredavious is really good. They probably could use another corner, but so could everybody in the league, apart from maybe New England. I admire watching that. I really love watching it because it's kind of like it's an execution defense in the sense that, here what we're going to do. We're not going to surprise you with some kind of weird game plan, but we're going to do it so well, it's going to be hard to beat us.
Exactly.
It's not like New England where every week they'll come out with some different defense, hopefully you haven't prepared for. And I admire that, they've gone out and got players who can make that work. They can hold most teams pretty much in check in a league where it's very hard to hold teams in check these days.
Yeah. I mean, just quickly before we wrap up, obviously we got Chargers this coming Sunday. Do you have any views on what you think could actually happen in that game? Mainly from Bill's perspective.
It's gonna be a good test for Justin Herbert, really, and to see if he can take what they give him. Without the Chargers are not that good, which makes Herbert even more impressive. I mean, he does have some good receivers to throw to. Keenan Allen is another guy who, even though everybody knows he's really good, he doesn't get the appreciation that he probably should get. I think they'll be able to keep the Chargers offense in check because they can't run the ball. So it's really one and dimensional. I was having an argument with what's his name? From one of the reference sites, who was saying that Joe Burrow was basically the same as Sam Darnold, and you know, I was saying, you know, like the Cincinnati team Burrow joined is worse than the Jets team that Darnold joined. And I know Darnold had the injury and stuff like that, but you know, the Chargers were, what did they do? What was last week? They beat the Jets by a touch.
Jets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although it wasn't as close as that. It shouldn't have been, at least, because they were up.
Yeah.
They were up by, was it three touchdowns or something like that?
Yeah,
20-something, six, I think. At half. But you know, Ballage is their running back. You know, and he's not going to kill you. You know, with the best will in the world. And I went and looked at the stats. I'm going to write about this one in my column, which I'll probably do Thursday instead of Friday because of Thanksgiving. But they had 29 yards rushing in the end. I thought that's not right because Ballard. So I went and looked at the stats. And of course, they lost 28 yards when they had their punter run backwards to take a safety.
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's true.
Which was a great play. I mean, I had just written about a guy who did this in the what was his name? Eddie O'Rourke, I think, or Eddie O something, in the All American Football Conference. You know, they had like less than a minute left. They were playing single wing, and he took a snap, and then he just ran. He literally ran for like 50 seconds and took a safety. And then he was also the kicker. So he then kicked, you know, took the free kick and kicked it, and the game was over. So I like seeing that stuff happen, you know.
I think most people do. It just brings a bit of entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, their running game looked worse than it was, but it's not very good. So I think the Chargers are going to have a lot of problems. They Buffalo should win this game. You know, the Chargers came into the season, it was their defense that, you know, that should have been carrying them. And I know Ingram was hurt for a bit, but he hasn't done anything. You know, he doesn't look like Melvin Ingram this season, and that's put a lot of pressure on them. And you know, I just think that this game is Buffalo's to win. You know, and if they're going to win the division, you know, they should expect to win this game, you know.
Exactly.
I think what I'm looking at the chart I made right now, and so they should be the Chargers, and they should be San Francisco, although the road trip makes it. Then they've got Pittsburgh, then they're at Denver, which is always tough to play Denver at home. Then they're at New England, and they've got Miami. If I were Buffalo, I would have been more worried about New England if they had beaten Houston, because then they'd actually be in a position where if they, you know, run the board against the division at the end of the season, because they've got Miami, Buffalo, and the Jets in the last three games, you know, they would be in a position where they could have made the playoffs if they, you know, if they beat Houston and win one or maybe two of the other three games. But now I think they're just out of it, which makes that game less problematic for the Bills. They'll still be hard to beat.
Make it more of a bragging game for once.
Yeah. And you always wonder about that, because the Patriots are going to be in that funny position of being not used to having games where it's just a brag, you know, where it's just, you're just playing out the season. And Boston fans would tell you that's the time when their players always do really well, you know, because Red Sox were famous for that for years and years. You know, guys would stink up April, May, June, and July, and then like halfway through August, when they were 20 games out of first place, they'd start hitting and pitching like demons, you know, and finish the season 15 games out of first place, but with a good stat line. So yeah, like I said, I think Buffalo should finish with you know, you've got to give them wins against the Chargers, the 49ers, New England, and Denver. And possibly Miami, which would make them 12-4. But I was sort of allowing for one loss among those four, you know, San Francisco and Denver on the road. If they split that would be fine for them.
Yeah. Well, Mike, thank you very, very much for coming on the show. For all our listeners, where can they find you? You got, obviously you mentioned your Patreon
account. if you go to patreon.com, it's, you know, Mike Carlson, FMTE, which is my old Friday morning tight end column from the old NFL UK days. I have a page on Medium where I don't normally write about football. Occasionally that comes up. But the last thing I wrote was yesterday on the Kennedy assassination, the literature of the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
That's really about it on the writing front. The Twitter is at Carlson Sports, which is probably the wrong Twitter handle when you're not talking about sports, but there you go. And did I mention that Daryl Worley and Brian Cox are on the Bills practice squad?
Yeah.
Talking about Carolina on my mind. It's like, I'll tell you who I did like, though. And they picked up Kumerow, who, I think might help them a bit. And Darren Lee, who is a hell of a football player who just can't put it together.
Exactly.
He should be a really good player. When Matt Milano went down, I thought, okay, Darren Lee gets his shot now. But he's, I get the feeling he doesn't understand football. It's like he understands me hit guy, but not like where he's supposed to be on a specific play, something like that. Cause he's had his chances, and he's really good. But the guy who really intrigues me is Trey Adams.
Yeah.
I liked him a lot in college, but he's got physical problems. He missed a lot of college time with a back injury. So there's, I guess, questions about his mobility, his put on weight, to bend, to bend from the knees instead of the waist. But if he could play the way he had before his injury, he could be playing for that team. And the reason I mentioned this is I just took a look at the roster, before we went on, and I'd forgotten that. But when I talk about the way Brandon Bean and McDermott sort of worked together, you can see why these guys are there. They're not necessarily going to play, but if they have to, they're guys at least they can work with, who offer something. And that's what the bottom of your roster and your practice squad is for, is for taking looks at those kind of guys. I also was a big Davis Webb fan when he came out. I mean, with reservations, and the reservations have been proven very true. But I thought he had some potential. He's going down that Kyle Bowler route for Cal quarterbacks, Jared Goff. They all seem to be the same, these tall, skinny guys with pretty good arms, who kind of give the deer in the headlights kind of thing.
Yeah.
I can go on forever about like I said, I like the Bills. They're a team right now. That division, I think, is, with the Jets apart, what you've got are a couple of teams that are, and this is one last thing. Bill James called it the law of competitive balance. And I've used this before talking about in the 80s when you had the NFC with the Giants and then the Redskins and the Cowboys and the 49ers, all being really good. And they did that because competitive balance meant they had to do that in order to compete with the other good teams, So how can, you don't go in saying, how can I win 10 games? They went in saying, how can I beat the Giants? What do I need to be able to beat Washington? What kind of a team do I have to put together? And that's what you see now in the NFC East. And Miami did it by bringing in Flores from New England. The Bills have done it but the first hurdle for them is, how do I beat New England? And to beat New England, you have to be good on both sides of the ball. You have to be controlled. You have to be smart. And both these teams are now, all those things. And that's great because it makes the football so much better, you don't want to be handing one team, five wins automatically in their division every year,
Exactly. I mean, Mike, this chat was unbelievable. I enjoyed it. So much. I think our followers and listeners will enjoy it much.
hope so. And good luck, and good luck in the playoffs.
Awesome. Thank you very much for coming on, Mike.
No problem, Matt. Thanks.
And we thank Mike there for a brilliant insight, a brilliant interview. I think it's nice to have a perspective from a non-Bills Bills reporter, someone from the national media, given their opinions. So absolutely. I hope you guys all enjoyed it. Let's move on. We're on week 12, where these 3-7 Los Angeles Chargers, I was going to say San Diego Chargers there,
it would be
visit Orchard Park to actually face the 7-3 Buffalo Bills. So Alex, what's your first thoughts? I can't say those words. Thoughts of the game.
They're better than their 3-7 record, which is a little bit worrisome. You really go down the list of their games played and you'll wonder, you know, what happened. This is a good team, a really good passing offense, an average defense that just has found ways to lose late in games. Their biggest loss was by 8 points. For this week, I mean, I would say all signs point to a close game, which is what we've all been used to, right? So get another heart attack, possibly. Go ahead. What?
Yeah, no, carry on. You say you're thinking of high scoring.
Yeah, I mean, shootout. This game has shootout written all over it. Breaking this game down statistically was a little bit eye-opening, a little bit worrisome, possibly. The Chargers, they're a passing offense predominantly. They pass more than the Bills do, which is odd considering how much we pass the ball. They're 10th in pass attempts, and we're 16th. And with that, you would think, oh, well, they don't run the ball. But they're 4th in rushing attempts, and we're 26th. I mean, this is an offense coming into town that has run 720 offensive plays, second in the league. The Bills are all the way down at 22 with 637. So that stat is really telling because it could mean a multitude of things. I mean, is it their defense is so bad that their offense is always on the field? Or is it that their defense, I mean, because they give up big plays and they let a lot of scoring quickly? Or is their defense so good that they're forcing 3-and-outs and the Chargers offense is always on the field? In analyzing their defense, it's very similar to ours in that sense. They're very susceptible to the deep pass. When you look at how they're being targeted 9 yards down the field in the passing game. So I'm assuming we're going to see a lot of Diggs and Beasley kind of over the middle. What that stat tells me is that the Chargers play a really soft zone. They don't blitz. They blitz, I think it's 15% of their plays last in the league. So no blitzing means a lot of defenders dropping back into coverage. And I think that Allen really can pick apart a zone. You would think with that low blitzing percentage that they don't get to the quarterback, but they do pressure at 23%. The Bills at 19%. The biggest takeaway, though, I think defensively for the Chargers is that they don't force turnovers. I think they only have 9 this year, which is 30th in the league, where the Bills are at 16, placing them 6th. So,
ouch.
I'm thinking that this is going to be a game where our defense getting pressure on the quarterback via the blitz will force Herbert into some rookie mistakes, and that's how we'll end up winning the game. If we allow him to pick us apart, then it's going to be really challenging because Keenan Allen is a legit threat. If there was anything to focus on, it's the love affair between Herbert and Keenan Allen. He targets Keenan Allen more than any other QB wide receiver combo in the league. They are
a
threat.
Don't I know it? I have Mike Williams on my bloody fancy team.
Yeah,
he doesn't get me many points.
Yeah, three targets a game almost. But I mean, Keenan Allen, you're looking at 10 plus targets per game. You know, Allen and Diggs are on the same page, but Herbert and Keenan Allen are on, you know, the next page. It's really legit and it's really scary. Don't just take the Chargers at their 3-7 record. They have an opportunity to come in and shock the Bills and shock people who don't really pay attention to the little stats because they are better than 3-7.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're ranking in offense rushing. It obviously speaks for itself. But the interesting stat is actually whether it's obviously showing that they're more of a throwing team than anything is the quarterback comparisons. Okay, Herbert's played one less game than Josh Allen, but Herbert's completion percentage is 68%. Josh is 68.4. Pass attempts, 350 to Herbert, 364 to Allen. Passing yards, 2,699 to Herbert, 2,871 for Josh. Passing touchdowns, 22 Herbert, 21 Allen. Interceptions, 6 Herbert, 7 Allen. Sacked, 19 Herbert, 20 Allen. And then where it sort of goes in Allen's favor, rush yards, 187 for Herbert with 3 touchdowns and 279 rush yards for Allen and 5 rushing touchdowns for him. So Herbert, I think, should have been come out as the number one quarterback. He's one of those guys that he can win you games, and he's been so unlucky in the whole season. As you say, they've lost. The most they've lost by is 8 points. So all games they've lost, they've actually done it by one score.
Yeah.
And when you look at their conversion rates on third downs, they've actually they're at 46.5% of their conversions on third downs, 67 out of 144. And obviously the Bills are at 50% with 60 out of 120, and even third down. And on fourth downs, we're 100% 3-for-3. The Chargers are 6-for-13, 46.2% on fourth down. And another one other stat in the red zone, their attempts, the percentage for the Buffalo Bills 62.5 and the Chargers 58.8. So you're right when you first said it's going to be really a high scoring game. I see both defenses being stretched, especially in the secondary. It's just how we get that pressure.
You really want to think that the Bills coming out of a bye should be able to be a step ahead of their opponent. And, you know, I'm trusting in our coaching staff to be able to do so. The troublesome thing is if the Bills are preparing for what the Chargers have done and always do, if the Chargers make one adjustment, then we're going to have to adjust on the fly. And there goes 2 weeks of preparation, you know? So
yeah,
it's really going to come down to what McDermott versus Anthony Lynn can put together and see what happens during the game. A rookie quarterback shouldn't beat a team as good as the Bills. So that's really what I'm leaning on. I'm expecting them to make a mistake somewhere.
Exactly. I mean, if you've seen Chargers games, I haven't seen that many of them, but he is prone to obviously getting those incompletions and making a few mistakes. Obviously, the stats of the interceptions and all that is lower than Allen, but the turnovers, really, I haven't seen that many that he's actually that he's personally done, whether it be throwing or running. But that's really where the Bills have got to take advantage, because I say Keenan Allen, they may have Austin Eckler back, and we know what we've been like against the run. And obviously they got Joey Bosa on defense. They've got playmakers in their own right that will really challenge the Bills. And I think it's a good game to come out of the bye from, because you could come out the bye and say, for example, play the Jets, you know you're probably going to have an easier game. That's not really something to shake the cobwebs out of not having a game last week. When you go some of the Chargers, who, regardless of the records, are almost on a similar plane as the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that really gets you back into the swing a bit, because we've got a good run in, or potentially a good run in, and it's always good to actually start off after the bye week, obviously with a win and the confidence higher than usual.
Yeah. When I hear the word, I'm picking the Bills to win. I'm really close to like calling it a coin flip, and I really don't want to. Because you look at 7-3 versus 3-7, you're like, you can't lose this game. But looking at their schedule real quick, I mean, you have. They beat Cincinnati, whatever. They lost to Kansas City in overtime. They lost to the Panthers by, you know, like 5 points. They lost to Tampa Bay by just a touchdown. They lost to New Orleans in overtime. They beat the Jaguars. Who doesn't? They lost to the Broncos by 1 point. They lost to the Raiders by, 4 points. They lost to the Dolphins by a touchdown, and they easily beat the Jets. The good thing is if the Jets can put up 28 points on the Chargers, we should be able to put up more, you know? Yeah. So I guess last week's game is going to be the saving grace for me, is that if the Jets can play them close, if the Jets can put up, 292 total yards, we should be able to put up 400, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's good that, we know pound for pound we can take on pretty much any offense, obviously excluding the Titans game, but that was for a different matter.
Yeah.
But pound for pound on offense, we can actually we can really hang with anyone. So my only worry, if you can call it really a worry, is just going to be that defense and how they can react. Can we now get back to how we've been the last couple of weeks, where we've actually started to improve quite a lot and actually be a bit dominant with the takeaways and the play on defense? Can we get that sorted?
Right.
But no, it's one last thing I want to quickly talk about. It's a godsend that the break came at the right time. It's the injury report.
Yeah.
Obviously, the only one we really have issue with at the moment is John Brown after that apparent ankle injury he suffered against the Cardinals. But Norman's been reallocated back to the full squad. Knox is back. Tywan Jones is back. Jerry Hughes is full practice. Obviously, Fromm's in his COVID practice on his own. Cody Ford still limited. Epinesa's full practice after a concussion, and obviously Addison having his rest day. So
yeah, I mean, we talked about how important John Brown is, right?
Yeah.
We talked about John Brown and his importance to the offense and what this offense can do when he's in there. So aside from Cody Ford being in there, because like I said, the Chargers aren't going to blitz us very heavily. Allen should be able to stand up. You just got to really focus on, their one-on-one matchups and their gaps. But if Brown's not in, I think you got a real heavy lean on the rookie and what he's able to do in terms of getting separation, taking, attention away from Diggs. Can he do that if he's thrust into the starting, X or Y spot?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we'll still have Diggs and Beasley there to soften the blow a bit, but
maybe we see some more Dawson Knox. It's tough to say.
Maybe we'll see a few more McKenzie throws. Some more trickery in there, but
if we've had 2 weeks to work on some trick plays, let's see if they do it.
Exactly. I think he'll be the Brown will be the main miss if come Sunday he's on the inactive list. And another good point, which we can talk about another day, obviously, that Mitch Morse is now not on that injury report. So hopefully he's fully fit. Hopefully whatever happened last week, if he was just there as an emergency, he'll be back as the starting center this week. But we'll all wait and see on Sunday.
One sleeper note to think about is the Chargers have given up 8 touchdowns to tight ends this season. So if the Bills can get in the red zone, look out for Croft or Knox. This could be the game where we say, oh, here's Dawson Knox. Or it could be a game where Croft catches 2 touchdowns in the red zone. The Chargers linebackers give up stuff against tight ends. So if that's something that we can focus on, that might open up stuff for Diggs and Beasley.
Yeah, it might be the game where we say, oh, look, it's Dawson Knox. He's finally come out next week.
Yeah.
Where the hell has Dawson Knox gone? Why is he not like last week?
You got to find out what could win, and that's different every week. So this week is going to be focusing on hitting the soft spots in their zone and hitting tight ends down the field. And that's going to lead to our success on offense.
Yeah. So I would ask you for any last thoughts, but in this instance, I'm just going to say, do you have a prediction at all for the game?
30-27 Bills.
30-27 Bills. Okay. I'm still going to say it's going to be a win for the Bills. I think we actually go for a 2-score win. I think we get a 2-score win in this game, whether it be nice. 10 points or 14 points. I'm calling it, I'm going 37-27.
37 sounds good. I'll take that.
I'm thinking that there's going to be a big play in that game.
Yeah.
And it's going to be reliant on that secondary. If White can lock down Allen, I think Hyde and Poyer pretty much can have a run of that offense or that secondary. So I think it's going to be a 2-score win. I would put a hot take on, but I'm still going over the stats to do that. I think. Oh no! Here we go. Could get a hot take. We're gonna see a running back, more likely Moss, going for 100 yards, and Beasley's gonna have another 100-yard game.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that running back call is a pretty big hot take.
Yeah.
Because
I think
they did talk about it being a focus, so we'll see on that.
Yeah. Yeah. So if there's nothing else that you want to add?
No, I mean, the Chargers are average against the run. They give up 4.6 yards an attempt. That's 10th worst in the league. We're 4th worst. But, let's try and run the ball. You know, when I talk about the Chargers having the most of the offensive plays, what did I say? They were 2nd in the league in offensive plays. If we can run the ball, then we can take away the Chargers' ability to have the ball for long periods of time, because we're going to have the ball for long periods of time. And that's going to be really important.
Exactly. So my thanks once again to Mike Carlson for the interview earlier. That's the end of our 100th episode. I hope you've enjoyed every single one of them. And here's to another 100 more. So for Alex, this is Matt saying, keep liking, keep following, keep hitting that subscribe button and all notifications. And good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening. Have a good weekend. See you on Sunday for the review show. And let's see the Bills go 8-3. So for Alex, Matt saying, go Bills.
Go Bills.
Not us.
Not us.
You don't know anything about heart? Mm-hmm.
You know anything about work?
No.
Huh? That's who we are.
Those on three. One, two, three.